These are Rip Van Winkle investments where you set it and forget it. You fall asleep for 10 years and you've made $1 million in appreciation, not a cash flow game, but an appreciation game. And that's the beauty of these house hacks. You can get in expensive markets, live there, and then keep it for the longer term.
Welcome to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Are you trying to get out of debt? Invest, or just not sure where to start? Then this is the place for you. We discuss different ways to get out of the rat race and build your wealth. Join us on this wild ride to financial freedom.
Hey, welcome back to the Average Joe Finances Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Mike Cavagione, and today's special guest is Becca Hint. I'm super excited to talk to her today. We were talking a little bit off camera about where she lives in Costa Rica, comparing the paradises that we both live in. She's in Costa Rica. I'm in Hawaii. It's pretty cool to talk to somebody that has palm trees around them at all times like I do as well. Still way different time zones, so I appreciate you taking the time, but welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
I wish we should both have our real backgrounds of palm trees and the beach.
Yeah, absolutely. But here I am in my closet in my house. This is my studio.
I do podcasts outside and then the howler monkeys start howling and people think I'm groaning at them. And a couple times back, I got hit by a beetle on the side of the head. So
I've decided to keep it indoors. But pleasure to see you, my friend. And thanks so much for having
me.
I look forward to our conversation.
I am as well. Speaking of our conversation, I'd like to ask you the first question, which is the same question I ask everybody that comes on the show. And we want to know about you. So if you could share with us your story, who is Becca Hint?
Oh, you bet. My husband and I were medical device reps, and we lived in the San Francisco Bay Area. And when I started my career in med device, I simultaneously bought a duplex in San Francisco that I house hacked. And this was an enlightenment into real estate in the beauty of passive income. And I realized that whether I go to work or not, that mailbox money still keeps coming in. So my journey into real estate began about 18 years ago while straddling my med device job. And currently you find me in Nosara, Costa Rica, which is a boutique surf and yoga hub on the Pacific side in Costa Rica. This is one of the blue zones of the world. You being in Hawaii might know about this. Are you familiar with blue zones?
I am, yes. Oh, I see them. Yeah. Actually, they have people that walk around with the blue zone shirts on all the time. I see them in my neighborhood. They just walk around and they are much older people.
Really impressive. Yeah, for your listeners that don't know about this, there's books on it, movies on it, cookbooks on it, and it's essentially places in the world where there's the largest concentration of centenarians, people that live to 100 years old and beyond in very good health. And part of that, a huge part of it, is their lifestyle, food, and other factors. And you Google it and you'll see what I'm talking about. But where we are in Guanacaste province of Costa Rica, this is a blue zone of the world. We've been here several times. And I've been trying to teach my kids Spanish since they were quite young. So we frequented Costa Rica. And it came about the pandemic that things just became a little crunched in the Bay Area. And I said to my husband one day, hey, have you thought about how much we can get for rent for this house right over the Golden Gate Bridge when people are dying to get out of the city? And how much we can go live in the tropics for and work off that arbitrage? That delta of the income. And so the quest began. It took us about 6 months, but we moved here to Costa Rica about a year.
So when you moved to Costa Rica, did you still just have that one duplex or were you doing other things as well?
Oh, other things.
Okay. I just want to make sure because I know you invest in multifamily, right? I wanted to get into that a little bit, but I wasn't sure if you moved to Costa Rica first, then started investing in multifamily, because then I was going to say, wow, not only did you move to another country and then you started investing in multifamily? That's crazy.
Oh,
okay,
no,
cool.
Oh, this has been a bunch of things stitched together over the years, several investments, but we just rounded it all up and hit the road for the tropics.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, so it all started with a duplex in San Francisco that you house hacked. What was the next steps? What made you go from doing the house hacking thing to looking at other aspects of real estate, but mainly multifamily?
From the house hack, I was addicted to the passive income and mailbox money. And anybody who hasn't house hacked or is a young person that has the opportunity to do this, I would highly encourage it. In the case of, just to give you an example of how this works, in San Francisco, it's a duplex. So I lived in the upper unit, renovated the lower unit, then flip-flopped and lived in the other unit, renovated that, lifted up this 1900s Victorian, put steel beams in and put a garage underneath to charge another $500 for parking, blew out the backside, rebuilt the backside, put in decking, condo converted, and boom, done. This was a huge project for somebody who didn't even own a hammer, wasn't married, I was single at the time, but it has turned out to be such a good investment. And for those folks living in expensive cities, as you do when you're young, you want to be in the cities, the San Francisco, the Chicago's, New York. This is a great strategy to get into these markets at a very low cost. You can get owner-occupied loans and still have a little bit of the economies of scale of at least a duplex, a tri, or a quad. Doing that again, I would have done another one and I would have done a quad just to have more income from that. But there's certainly a place for things like this in your portfolio, even in these expensive cities, which you'll find it's pretty hard to get these to cash flow. But think of these as your house hack to get started, and then you keep them later on in that appreciation bucket. These are Rip Van Winkle investments where you set it and forget it. You fall asleep for 10 years and you've made $1 million in appreciation, not a cash flow game, but an appreciation game. And that's the beauty of these house hacks. You can get in expensive markets, live there, and then keep it for the longer term.
Now, I love that, Becca. I appreciate appreciation 100% because where I live at out here in Hawaii is very much a buy and hold market. It is an appreciation market. It is not a cash flow market, mm-hmm. right? Now, in today's economy, cash flow is king, right? Mm-hmm. But to still have a couple things in there that are going to appreciate and give you that value. And I like what you said too. Hey, in 10 years, I accidentally have $1 million home, something like that, right? You build this equity over this time while you forget about it. And it's one of those things that you can just set it and forget it, like you said. Now, sometimes your tenants might remind you that it's still there, toilet breaks or something like that. But yeah, it's one of those things essentially that house hacking can be that catalyst that drives you into bigger investments because, you know, that first property, there's so much you could do with it. After you've had it for a couple of years, you've built up this equity and you could take out a HELOC, you could do a cash out refinance, use that money to get into something bigger, right?
Yeah. And to convert them and sell one, pay off the others.
It is a catalyst to help you scale and step it up to the next level. But I like what you said about that too, about the economies of scale, right? That if you would have done it again, you would have, the second one would have been a quad, right? Yeah. Just to get the number of units up. And a lot of people, when I talk to them about investing in real estate in general, they're like, oh, it's not about the number of units. It's about the quality of property that you buy. But at the same time, if you can buy something on a single family budget, that's actually four doors, not only is that going to pay your mortgage for you, but it's going to put more money into your pocket as well.
That's right. And then think of the repairs around the property too.
Right.
If you're in a quad, 3/4 of those repairs become tax deductible, as opposed to a single family home. It's all on you.
Exactly. In a duplex, it's 50-50. So you get to expand on that a little bit more, which is really good.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. So you bought the duplex, then you started getting involved in other things, but why did you choose to go the multifamily route instead of maybe purchasing more single family assets or anything like that? Why was multifamily so enticing to you?
I started in the multifamily game just in a smaller scale. And I don't know, at that time, just getting a taste of the extra income and small multi, I knew I wanted to go bigger. So I took a coaching program back then, and this was a while ago, and it was the RE Mentor program. It was Dave Lindahl. He was the only guy in the game at that point. There's many of them now. And then from there, I said, okay, I need more of these. I need more mailbox money. So I used my IRA and I bought a 12 unit in Kansas City. And that was my first venture really into out-of-state real estate, using my IRA, my retirement money for that. And also, it was quite a training ground. We all get our battle scars from real estate investing. I sometimes think like I'm the crash test dummy lady of real estate investing, but boy, have I learned a lot. This 12 unit in Kansas City was just so much learned there. And this was a funny deal because it was a speculation play. And the path of progress only needed to move one block. That's it. It was a one block away. It was a B plus area. And I was right on the border, which was like a C property. But something to think about, your strategy must match the timeline. So the path of progress happened, the area rose up, but I only kept it for 3 years and it rose up 10 years later.
So that same property, I was on a women's group call a couple of months ago, and one of the other women were bidding on the property that I had owned, and I bought it for $250,000, sold for $300,000, and there were 12 bids on it for $950,000 in Kansas City. Good grief. I saw it coming, but I just couldn't wait it out.
Oh my goodness. So there's a lot to unpack there. So for one, you tapped into your IRA to purchase this property. Can we talk about that a little bit? What was that like? Did you wind up paying the penalty, or was there a program that you went through where you were able to pull it out, or was it like self-directed IRA? Like, how did you get into that?
Yeah, it was a self-directed IRA.
Okay. Fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Yep, self-directed IRA.
A lot of people don't realize that you can take your retirement account and buy real estate with it if you have a self-directed IRA. So that's just another way to do something a little different, right, than standard, I'm going to put it in the S&P 500 and retire at the ripe old age of 65 or later. So there are other options out there. Okay, no, that's great.
The self-directed IRA is so powerful. And also solo 401ks, for any of your listeners that aren't familiar with those, definitely Google those and see what power that can bring you. But at least you have control over it and control over those investments. Yeah. Solo 401k, I'm a little bit more fond of these days as I'm looking for places in Costa Rica. And you have a bit more flexibility with solo 401ks in buying property out of the country. And so I like to have different buckets, Mike. So I'm looking at property in Costa Rica for a greater velocity of money, these quick flips, fix and flips. Here you can buy land for 400, build for another 400, and then sell for 1.4 in 18 months. There's an abundance of labor here. Huge labor force. And then I like another bucket, like what I described with San Francisco, your Rip Van Winkle investments, your set it and forget it bucket, a good appreciation play like in Hawaii, New York, Chicago, San Francisco. And then my favorite of the three buckets is our beloved multifamily. And I love this multifamily investing syndication for the cash flow benefits it brings and the tax benefits, and ultimately the goal for us, lifestyle independence, location freedom, and mailbox money does that for you. And that avenue I'm finding best fits in the multifamily space.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And I like that it's about the independence, right? So when we talk about building financial independence on this podcast, I think, Becca, you're really hitting on the importance of that. It's not just about being financially independent. It's about having that true sense of freedom where you can say, you know what? We want to pick up and leave the States and go move to Costa Rica. And then we can go live in paradise, right? And we can go figure out something else that we want to do. And now you have the options that while you're there, you're like, hey, I want to buy some land out here and build some property, develop some property and turn around and flip that for a profit. And now you've got these profits that you could say, hey, I could turn around and put this into a multifamily deal back in the States, right? So there's all this stuff you can do once you build that freedom and that independence like you have done, right? So I think that's one of the things that you get with investing, not just in multifamily, but just investing in general. If you're investing in good cash flowing assets, good appreciating assets and things that are going to help build your wealth, you can get there in a relatively short time. And I say relatively short time, I'm talking like 10 years down the road, whereas a typical retirement plan, you're looking 30, 40, 50 years sometimes before you get to that point where you've truly reached quote unquote independence. But in the real estate game, you can really get there in 10 years and sometimes even less. And it's just about how aggressive you are and how much you attack and go out there and find the deals and put in the work and put in the effort, which it looks like you most definitely have. So congratulations to you and your family with being able to have this time freedom and this location freedom to be able to live in Costa Rica.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. And likewise, right back to you, you're living in paradise. And it's a paradigm shift. It's a new thinking that the new currency of the rich isn't your Mercedes or your Tesla. It's your time freedom.
I like that. I like that. Yeah. And that is the currency, is time, right? Getting that time back, because you could have all the money in the world. It means nothing if all you're doing is working all the time to try to keep that cash flow coming in. So building up these passive cash flow assets is just something that's going to give you that freedom. And you could do it as slowly as you want or as quickly as you want, depending on how aggressive you want to get. I want to touch on something you said earlier about the blue zones, right? Like I said, I've got the blue zone people that I see walk around here in Hawaii. Hawaii is not a blue zone, right? We have Yeah. There's the Blue Zone Hawaii Club. I don't know, but we are not a Blue Zone. And when you look at some of the different Blue Zones, think a lot of that, like you said, it's lifestyle, it's the health, but part of that healthiness and that healthy lifestyle is that you have that time freedom, that you have the time to go eat healthy meals and cook for yourself and do that instead of always being in a rush because you're in the rat race and picking up fast food and things like that. I feel like that makes such a big difference, and just the mental side as well, your mental health, because you worry for nothing. You don't worry about money because you know you've got the cash flow coming in. The biggest thing you're worrying about is making sure, is my team doing what they're supposed to be doing to ensure that all operations are still running smoothly? Right. Once you know that you've got a good team and you've built this, that's one less thing you have to worry about as well. Sure, you still worry about it, but it's not, it doesn't have to be something like, oh my God, the world's going to end every time you get a phone call. You know, you see the phone ring and you get that sense of dread and it's like, oh no. And once you get past that, man, stress-free life, you get to eat healthier. Tell me what it's like living in a Blue Zone. Cause I'm curious, are you surrounded by a bunch of old people? Or are you surrounded by a bunch of people that are healthy, vibrant, and just living a great life?
Surrounded by people that are healthy, vibrant, and living a great life. On the Blue Zone front, for your listeners, there's, I think, about six of these in the world. As Mike said, Hawaii's not one of them, believe it or not. There's Costa Rica, which is one of them. Okinawa, Japan's another one. Sardinia's another one. There's a few more after that. But it's not areas where people are eating fast food. And it's not areas where people are completely stressed out on the corporate job and they work 70 hours a week. It's a place where people value their family time. It's just so much more relaxed overall in the food. A big part of it is the food. And if you look up Blue Zones, you'll see this. In Costa Rica in particular, it's pretty basic food, really. It's not a flavor explosion by any means, but it's your beans and rice, your homemade tortillas, your plantains, coconut water, lots of tropical fruit, probably quite similar to Hawaii in the sense of that, except with the absence of fast food. There's no teak surf and yoga town on the beach, but in the big cities, you can find that. And as you look in the big cities, the health of the people decline the more they're eating those kind of food and the busier that their life becomes.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And one of the things that I've found, especially since retiring from the Navy and being home a little bit more, is I'm not eating as much of the not so good foods as I was before. Because at home, like, we're plant-based, right? Yeah. So it's awesome. Pretty much every morning I have an acai bowl with fresh fruit on top. And it's just something that's refreshing. And I was talking to a couple military buddies of mine. And one of the things we were talking about is, you're retiring, man. You know, you're going to gain weight after you retire and this and that. I said, honestly, guys, I think I'm going to be the guy who actually loses weight in retirement. Oh, what do you mean? How? Why? And I was like, I'll be eating at home. Okay, so what's that mean? I was like, at home, I'm a vegetarian, right? So I eat plant-based anyway. But secondly, my wife cooks very good organic whole foods, right? Yeah. And a lot of times we eat a lot of raw foods too. So it's having that shift and having the time freedom now to make sure that I get up every morning and work out every morning before I start my day. Like, this past week has been so awesome because I've been getting up every morning. I've been getting my workouts in first thing of the day. I drink my lemon water before I even have my coffee. And I just feel so refreshed. And actually, I could probably cut coffee out now at this point. But for me, 20 years in the military, it's like one of those things it's memory that my hand goes like this and I sip the coffee. It just has to happen, right? So trying to transition fully over to just waking up and having the lemon water and that's it. But this is something that you get by putting in that effort up front, right? And that's what I'm talking about with you here and everything that you've done. I'd like to kind of touch on some of the investments that you have made. So if we could talk about that a little bit, what are some of the multifamily deals that you're currently involved in right now?
Yeah, you bet. And for your listeners, if anybody is aspiring to do this or move to the tropics and leave it all behind like we did, part of the Great Resignation, and tell your med device boss is adios, or people that just want to straddle to warm weather locations, or maybe move overseas and keep your corporate job, but just work less hours. You can absolutely do this. And how you do it is you just stitch a bunch of things together. And that's what we've done. So how this works for us is we have the San Francisco building, my house hack, my Rip Van Winkle one, right? We have that passive income. It doesn't kick off a whole lot. It's still an appreciation market. So we have that one. Then we have our primary residence over the bridge in Marin that we rented our primary residence. And that's another thing to think about for your listeners should you decide to do this. Turn your primary residence into an asset rather than a liability. Up to a year ahead of time, all those repairs to prepare your home for a rental become tax deductible. You need a new kitchen, bathroom, windows, the whole bit. Dial it up. It becomes tax deductible. Going to see your property, visit your property, hence visiting your family while you're there, that flight is tax deductible. So a big part of it is turning things into a tax advantageous situation. So that's one. And then on the multifamily side, we have a number of things going. I'm a passive investor in several deals, 450 total units currently and counting. Going to throw another 215 on this week. And these are deals where I'm a passive investor, primarily in Texas. We look for Texas, Georgia, the Carolinas. We look for emerging markets with population growth, job growth, and all the other indicators that we like, because all boats rise in a rising tide, provided you know what you're doing. Don't screw up too much. So we like those type of markets where things are emerging. And then I'm on the co-GP side. So in addition to being a passive investor, I'm probably 60 or 70% passive investor and probably, you know, 30% on the general partnership side. And what I do is I combine my money with my investor's money, and we go into this deal together in big chunks, often about $1 million chunks. And sometimes we're able to negotiate a better deal, like things that could be, we looked at a deal a couple of weeks ago at 9% pref if you bring $1 million, and it was a 7% pref if you just come in with your 50,000. So we like that coming in as a Groupon, and multifamily buildings are what we primarily invest in. About 18 months ago, I did a hotel conversion, my investors and I, and this was a lot of fun. These are fun deals for any syndicators you have out there. But this was a deal. It was a 100-unit Quality Inn that we're taking down to 65 units of multifamily, 31 one-bedrooms, 31 studios, and 3 two-bedrooms that were suites. And these are fun deals that you can get at such a good price. We got this 30 cents on the dollar, 70% discount.
Wow, that's awesome. Now, actually, I want to kind of talk about that a little bit, because I know a couple of the people that have done hotel conversions, and I've seen people do it both ways, where they took a multifamily unit and turned it into a hotel, or they took a hotel and turned it into a multifamily project. So You took it from 100 down to 65, and obviously there was some knocking down of walls and all that stuff to make it happen. How much of it did you have to completely just gut to make that work? And how much of it was just as simple as knocking down a wall and putting up a wall or anything like that? Because that sounds like such a huge undertaking. But like you said, it sounds like a lot of fun too.
It's both. It's a lot of fun and it's a huge undertaking. These are deep value add, heavy lifts. So for investors, buckle up. No money coming in for 18 months to 2 years. But on the other side of that, there's huge gains because we're getting it at such a discount. And as far as the renovation, there's lots to do. It's not just knocking down walls. It's quite a bit. But even more so, before you even get to the renovation, there's lots of pitfalls in hotel conversions. And I'd say the three of them themes would be zoning, franchise, and fire. Before you even start something like this, you have to buy out that franchise. So you have to buy out the Quality Inn franchise or whatever franchise you're looking into. And those could range from $35,000 to $250,000. And it starts there, because if you can't do that, then you're in the hotel business and you don't want to be in the hotel business unless you want to be. And then there's the zoning. So once you can get past the franchise, simultaneously, you're going to look at the zoning. You need to zone that, rezone it from a commercial hotel to multifamily. Ours was in a tertiary market in Arizona. So it was zoned similar for multifamily and hotels. It was just a change of use permit for us. But in Phoenix, one of our fellow investor friends, the city said, we'll give you your rezoning, but you'll need to put in a new road and two fire hydrants at the cost of $500,000, $500,000, zoning with strings attached. And then if there was any one theme with hotel conversions, it would really be fire. Strangely, many hotels don't have fire sprinklers. And I guess that's because they don't have kitchens, unless you get a suite, something like those. And that's the suite. That's the play, by the way, to do the suites that already have the kitchens. So you spend hundreds of thousands of dollars putting in fire sprinklers alone. They must be dedicated lines. So you need to put in a fire hydrant to go with it. Even the sheetrock.
That's a lot of work.
A lot of work. The sheetrock has to be thicker than it is in a typical hotel because of the fire risks there. So that's just at the beginning. And then as you get into these on the renovation side, as you mentioned, what do you do there? That's a whole lot to do there. If it's a second story hotel, you have these windows. We had these floor to ceiling windows that were beautiful, but because of fire, you need windows with egress. So next thing you know, you're tearing out these beautiful floor to ceiling windows and putting in these small windows so that they can open up and people, I guess, jump out of the second story. It seems crazy to me. But yeah, and the water hookups, you need to optimize those to put in kitchens. So what we did is we put the kitchens on the other side of the bathroom to save costs there.
Yeah, because you already had the plumbing already all set up there.
Yeah. So there's ways to save, but I could go on and on. I probably should write an ebook someday on this because there's so much to it, but they're a lot of fun.
If you do, let me know. I'd like to get a copy and then make sure we could share that with everybody as well. Okay, awesome.
Maybe I will.
Yeah. So yeah, that's very interesting. And I guess I was being a little, I guess, maybe not so much downplaying it, but when I was saying, oh yeah, did you like have to knock down walls and put up walls? Yeah, I know there's so much more work that needs to be done. But the thing is, like when you get a project like that, I'm pretty sure that return that you're going to get when that asset is ready and ready to go and it's occupied and cash flowing and you refinance it or sell it, right? It will be worth way more than what you paid for it, plus the amount that you put into renovation.
We'll get back to the show after a brief break.
What's going on, everybody? So today I want to talk to you about the podcast editing service that we use for the Average Joe Finances podcast. That is editpods.com. And what I really like about them is it's a subscription-based service, so the prices are fantastic. And not only do they do the podcast episodes for us, but they also make us videos, audiograms, social media caption videos. They do our show notes, thumbnails. It's just fantastic products. Go check them out at editpods.com.
What if I told you that you could be debt-free in 5 to 7 years? Hey, it's Mike Cavagione with the Average Joe Finances podcast, and I partnered with the Shred Method to help you pay off your mortgage fast. I personally use this method and was able to invest in 2 large multifamily apartment deals, pay off almost $30,000 in home renovation debt, and pay down a large chunk of my mortgage all within 3 months. I am confident in the Shred Method because it works. Did you know that you can eliminate your mortgage with the power of a simple tool called a HELOC? You can learn more about all of this at theshredmethod.com/averagejoefinances. And if you use that link, you're going to save $200 off of your initial cost. Again, this is something that I know works because I use it myself. And that's www.theshredmethod.com/averagejoefinances. Or just click that link below. Let's get back to today's episode.
And way more than you can make in multifamily, because as you and I know, it's been tricky to find deals in multifamily with cap rates compressed, sellers not reasonable, and a whole lot of buyers out there. So the margins in multifamily, even on value-add multifamily, have been really squeezed. So it's time to start looking other places, and that's what we did. We got this deal right at the hotel apocalypse at the beginning of the pandemic.
Oh, wow. So I guess it's been 2 years then. So where are you at in the process with this current deal?
We are just about to get the occupancy permits for phase 1. And while you hold these hotels, you still have your hotel permit. So you can run Airbnbs out of it or run it as a hotel. So we do have some kind of straggler people still there. But yeah, we're almost, the floors are in, the kitchens are in, paint's on, phase 1 is ready to go. We're just waiting for the occupancy permit.
Yeah, I'll be interested to follow this journey and see how this winds up. And that's really cool to take a 100-unit hotel and turn it into 65 multifamily unit apartment building. Just sounds like really cool. And when you talk about the fact that you were able to buy it in 2020, like during what you called hotel apocalypse. Wait, what did you say? I can't even say it. Hotel.
I can't spell it either.
Hotel,
don't worry.
Just say the hotel apocalypse.
That's it. You got it.
I can't even say it, but yeah.
And don't try to spell it.
But that's very interesting, right? Because you were able to get such a good deal on it because hotels were really like having a very hard time. Now, did you run into issues with the supply chain and everything, or were you able to squeak a lot of that in before that issue started happening this past year?
Good question. We hoarded supplies. So we did okay with supply chain, and we had all these vacant rooms to store everything in. So we have several rooms filled with just doors, several hotel rooms filled with just cabinets. So we did okay on the supply chain, and we checked and double checked and triple checked because we were very nervous because this is a huge lift. Where we struggled a little bit, as everybody is struggling, is labor. So we've had a little bit of labor shortages, and now we've got people back on what they needed to do. And there, we have more people on than we need just to get back on track. But we just lost a couple weeks. But it's what I hear from several people that are doing these deep value adds. There's so many things involved in with the supply chain and labor crisis, labor shortage. Those are two tough things for deep value adds. We've managed. And then another thing, as I mentioned, there's so much meat on the bone on these deals too. We're all just sitting back knowing that there's a great payout on the other side. I could go on in hotels forever. You hit on one of my favorite topics here. But there's so many uses for these too. Now, another thing that you can do, there's a company in Austin that are taking these hotels and they're leaving them as studios and renting them to millennials. And then the downstairs area is like a shared workspace. And so that's a great usage in a city like Austin, New York, San Francisco, where we're used to smaller rooms. And then San Francisco is buying hotels and repurposing them into homeless shelters for that situation that never seems to be able to resolve itself. And then Florida is loving these hotels for the purpose of senior living, because you have your common area down below. Thing to know in senior living, when you go into the fire side of things, those sprinklers have to have a greater velocity because it takes longer to get the older folks out of the building. So you'll probably have to have a couple dedicated lines, but something to think about. And it's a big cost, something to think about in Florida market. But there's so many things you can do with these hotels.
Yeah, that's a great point, all of that. And I think we're going to really see like a huge shift in a lot of these cities with some of these bigger hotels that are having to rethink how they're doing business, and probably going to see a lot more hotel conversions in the future. I wrote a whole article about this on my blog 2 years ago about the great escape from the city, right? And how everyone's with so many big companies now saying, hey, we're going to keep this telework thing going. You're going to see a lot of people just not going back to the cities, and they're going to want to either stay in the suburbs or do something different. But if you create more affordable housing options that are closer, where if people are still going in once a week and stuff like that, might be enough to motivate them to stay a little bit closer, but they want something that's going to be affordable and that's going to work for their use, right? That even during their off time, that they're going to be able to do the work that they need to do. And a lot of places like that have that common area and everything like that, it's more conducive to the younger generation. Yes. That wants to work from home but also at the same time, be able to socialize with other people. I'm a millennial too. I'm on the older spectrum of millennial, born in 84. But the piece of that I know, like a lot of people in my generation call it the coffee shop workforce generation, because that's when it became popular. The whole, I'm going to go to Starbucks, have some coffee and do some work on my laptop, get things done. Or I'm going to go to Panera Bread and order my soup and sandwich and get some work done. And it just became a very popular thing. So now you're creating these apartment complexes that have that same feel, where on the first floor, you've got the coffee shop, you've got the Wi-Fi, you've got the comfortable seating areas, you've got the workstations if people need them, you've got everything set up. I think we're looking at what like the next, I guess, living situation for the younger generations might start looking like towards the future, right? Am I just off my rocker here?
No, I think you're right on. No, I think you're right on that. And on the multifamily side and additional income streams, put a coffee shop down there, have a barista, and then you have a pool. Almost all the hotels come with pools. So I think it's a beautiful working situation.
Yeah, it's a very attractive option for someone that's looking for that decent living space at an affordable rate where they can still do everything that they wanted to do and not have to be so far away from everybody and so far removed from the hustle and the bustle, right?
That's right. And then not have this huge place that they have to pay so much for, 2 or 3 bedroom condo in San Francisco. All you need is a little space to sleep and a kitchen that's comfortable enough to maybe entertain a friend or two and then go downstairs and do your work. I think it's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, that's awesome. So this is not where I expected our conversation to go. No, it's pretty neat. And it gets you thinking, right? That especially with real estate investors, we're always looking at different ways to be creative and do something different that's going to work. And we're always looking to solve a problem. And that's the biggest thing, is solving the problem, solving the affordable living for people. People look at real estate investors, they're like, oh, they're greedy and they just want to make all this money. But no, a lot of real estate investors are very much problem solvers and trying to figure out ways to make things work that, yes, are advantageous to them to make a profit because this is how they make a living, but at the same time, create something that is more unique and something that is more affordable
for somebody that might want to stay in the city and be in those situations like that. It's that creative thinking that just that makes this world go round and round.
Yeah, it does. And if you can solve big problems for people, that's where the money is. And it feels good. It feels good. Meanwhile, you're improving communities. Yeah. And in respect to the housing crisis, hotels are a big part of that, because when builders build, as we know, they create new inventory. Right? They build A-class buildings, and that's the housing crisis isn't there. It's not for your A-class tenants. We'll just pay more. The housing crisis is for this lower middle class to upper lower class. And this is the working poor, the people that don't qualify for any concessions from the government or vouchers or anything like that. In the case of our hotel conversion, that is from the rental market of about $700 to $1,000. In Arizona. That's the working poor. And these are people that are traveling nurses, people living off the military base, off base, and people that are retail workers. That's where the housing crisis is. And with hotels, you can create, bring inventory to market that wasn't multifamily inventory. As with doing a value add renovation of a multi-class building, you're not bringing new inventory. You're improving living spaces for existing tenants. And that's great, but it's not new inventory and it's not solving the housing crisis. You're just upgrading what's already there.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, because we have a problem right now where there's not enough homes for people to live in right now. And now with the supply chain shortages and everything else, it's put a lot of pauses on development and things like that. So if you have an opportunity, like with what you're doing, where you're converting a hotel, where yes, you still need materials for that, but it's not as much as building a brand new development. So now you're at a place now where you're able to create 65 new places for people to live that wasn't there before, right? Because all that was there before is, hey, people swinging through town and needed a place to stay for the night. That's what you had. You're adding 65 units for people to live in that town. And that is huge. That's where the value add comes in. That's where you as a real estate investor being a problem solver, that's where that all comes in. Because solving a problem in that community by providing more housing for the residents there. So that's absolutely awesome. And that's the kind of perspective that's the way people need to look at this, right? That's the way you need to look at these things. And Becca, you are solving a problem. Being a real estate investor is just kind of a side thing to that. Your main thing is being a problem solver. And that's what you're doing.
How can you pick a problem and throw all your resources at it?
Yeah,
and choose your problem. There's plenty of them. But in real estate, we can choose the housing crisis. And then there's also the hotel problem simultaneously. There's two things that are struggling there. How can you bring those together and solve a problem?
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Yeah. I love that. Again, wasn't expecting the conversation to go this way, but I'm so glad it did, because this is something that I haven't really talked about on the show before. It's different. It's unique. I like it. I'd like to transition this into something that we call the final round. And this is where I'm going to ask you four hard-hitting questions. It's going to give the audience a good understanding of how you are and how you handle.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to ask me how my surfing is in the tropics.
Oh, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. But if you're ready to go, we'll get this party started.
All right. Let's get this party started. Hurry it up. Awesome. The beach is waiting.
All right, Becca. I know. Same here. So, Becca, what is the biggest mistake you've ever made?
Oh, gosh. I think it would come back to probably real estate investing. I think a big mistake was that 12 unit in Kansas City that I bought out there as the lone wolf. And it's just me and my IRA and not being in a partnership. And it was me trying to solve some of the problems of this building so far away. I'm thankful for that experience because there was a tremendous amount learned there. I cut my teeth there, but it was painful at the time.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Even when you were talking about it initially, it sounded painful when you purchased it. And then talking about it a couple of years later, watching other people bid on it in the 900s, and you're like, oh. So yeah, no, definitely. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. The honesty and the full disclosure there. Okay. So the next question kind of ties into all this. And what is something that you've learned that you wish you knew when you first got started?
Oh, what I wish I had learned when I first started was partner quickly, especially in multifamily. This is a team sport. You can partner up with people that are much better at you at certain things that you're not good at. So look where your weak points are and partner for your weak points. And I wish I would have known that early on. And had I figured that out early on, I would have never gone into that 12 unit in Kansas City. I would have partnered up and probably bought a much larger building with a team that specializes in asset management.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Thank you for that. Because that kind of also ties into that first answer to the biggest mistake that you ever made too, right? And you even said it just now with that, is that this is a team sport, right? Sure, you can invest in real estate by yourself, but you're not going to scale. And there's a lot more risk there because you're taking all the risk, right? Where if you go in with a team, that risk is equally divided. The benefits are equally divided, but at the same time, you're not doing it alone. And this is even for you introverts out there. It is very possible as an introvert to make this work as well, right? You got to come out of your comfort zone, get out there and meet people. But I think that's huge. And one of the things I talk about a lot on this show is networking and meeting people and going to real estate conferences, going to meetups, and just getting to learn what other people are doing, learn the mistakes that they made, yes. Listen to podcasts like this or Bigger Pockets and just see what other people are doing, right? And it gives you that idea. And maybe, who knows, maybe you can go and have that perfect record in the future where you don't have the same issues and mistakes that everybody has. But I'm telling you right now, that'll be very hard and few in between, because everyone makes mistakes. There's always something that you could have done better. But the best part is, and I think you mentioned this a little bit earlier before, Becca, is that with your 12 unit, it was an educational piece, right? It was just an expensive mm-hmm. education. You could sit here and say, hey, I lost money or whatever. But the way most of us real estate investors look at that is, I paid an expensive class on real estate.
That's right. It was an expensive seminar. It was, even though I was in a coaching program at the time, you'd think that I would have known, but sometimes you just don't know until you really get your feet wet.
You absolutely
really just have to jump in and educate yourself as much as you can beforehand.
Yeah.
And partner quickly. And for any introverts, as you mentioned, boy, if you want to sit behind a desk and look at Excel spreadsheets, great. There's plenty of extroverts to partner with that could use your skills. Just make sure you partner up.
Yeah, absolutely. All you got to do, it all starts with, hello, my name is. Awesome. Okay, cool. The next question I have for you ties into all this as well. And that is, do you have any tips or tricks that you would recommend to somebody that is just getting started today?
I would say if you're a passive investor, there are tips and tricks. I would partner up with somebody who will vet deals for you. I wish I had known as a passive investor when I invested in another deal 10 years ago that actually went sideways too. But it's because I didn't know what I was looking at then. And my model now is a product of those couple investments that went sideways. I actually look at these deals for my team, somebody to vet it, somebody to make sure that the property is not underinsured, and several other landmines along the way. If you want to just start as a passive investor, it would be good to team up with somebody who will look at these deals side by side with you and invest their money with you. Key number one. And then if you're interested in syndicating these deals on your own, I would say get into a coaching program, or at least get into a mastermind and surround yourself with like-minded people. And you don't want to be the smartest one in the room. If you're the smartest one in the room, go find another room.
Yeah, no, I love that. That's huge. Those are all key things. Like when you go out to these masterminds and you go to different meetups or you get involved in a coaching program, I believe in all that stuff. I'm in masterminds. I go to real estate meetups all the time. I go to conferences. And I have a coach that I pay. This is one of those things where you're either going to pay for your education up front or you're going to pay education on the back end. You know what I'm saying? These are the things that, for at least for me, it works. Mm-hmm. It's great to have a mentor. It's great to have a coach. It's great to have a team that's got your back. It's great to have a network of like-minded people that you can go talk to when you're having issues with something, or say, hey, has anyone else ever run into A, B, C, or D? What have you done in that situation? Things like that. So when you build this network, and I even said this on the last interview that I did about 2 hours ago, but it's cliche, but it's the truth. Your network is your net worth, right?
Yes.
And it's going to be the people that you surround yourself that will drive your success. So absolutely love that response, Becca. It's very telling, especially when I'm talking to somebody that is so experienced in so many different facets of real estate. For goodness sakes, you're doing this awesome hotel conversion, right? And you've learned so much. So to have somebody like you on the show be able to share and impart your knowledge on us is just something that I'm very grateful for. Thank you so much for that.
Oh, thank you, Mike. And likewise, thank you for all the knowledge you bring to us and elevating us all in our investing knowledge. It does take a village.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I really do. Now I have one more question of the final round for you. And this is more of an opinion-based question. And I'm pretty sure I know what the answer is because we talked about it offline a little bit. But do you have a favorite business, investing, or real estate related book or podcast or both?
Oh boy, do I. Books are my favorite. Of course, there's the Purple Bible, right? Everybody knows that, the Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Building a Story Brand is also a good book. I'd recommend that read. But my favorite of all of them is Who Not How. And I love this book because I feel it has liberated me. It liberates me from the point of beginning to outsource all the things I don't do well. And the concept of this book is you can take anything from the 0 to 80% fairly easily. It's all in your head. You just write it down. But taking things from the 80 to 100% is pretty hard. Taking things from the 80 to 90% is hard, but from the 90 to 100% is like climbing a mountain. So I don't struggle with taking things from that 80% to 100 anymore. At that 80% mark, I outsource. And it's just been a game changer.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I had to learn the hard way to start outsourcing myself. And it's been a good learning experience for me. And once I started outsourcing certain things to free up my time, for one, but for two, to have somebody else to bring that particular task from that 80% to 100%, where I was just struggling to keep it at 80, knowing when to let go of the reins and let somebody else take that and run with it and feel comfortable with doing that, completely changed the game for me. It's actually one of the reasons why my podcast has been able to grow the way that it's grown, because I had to learn to let go and let somebody else that was better at something take care of it. And me, I get very like, oh, I like to do things myself. I was like, they're not going to do it better than me because I know what I want. What I want is this, but I don't have the time to do this. I need somebody that knows how to do this that's going to free up that time for me so I can go do yoga in Costa Rica.
Yeah, love it. You're speaking my language. You're speaking my language. I love it.
It's funny with us real estate investors anyway, because we often start out as do-it-yourselfers. So I think it's even more difficult for us to outsource because we think, oh, we've done this and we've done that and we know how to do it ourselves. We're just the DIY. Many people start that way, but there's a time to release that and outsource it. And from that, you can grow tremendously, as you discovered. What part of your podcast do you outsource now?
The editing, the social media posting, pretty much everything. I just record the content and give it to my team now. I used to do a lot of the self-editing and then let the editing team edit other parts. But now I record the content. I hand it to my assistant. She does what she does, hands it off. Next thing I know, it's getting posted on Buzzsprout. It's getting uploaded to YouTube. My audiograms and social media caption videos are coming out on social media, and none of that is me anymore, which has been like life-changing, to tell you the truth.
Oh, wonderful. And did you use Fiverr for that in finding your VAs to do it?
Or I used Upwork.
Upwork. Yeah. Love Upwork too.
Yeah, I've talked about that a couple times in the show too. And one of the things that I've learned was to let them come to you. Don't go try to find somebody. Let them come to you. So I created the job. I let people apply for it. And then I narrowed it down to a certain amount of people. I interviewed 4 people and then picked the one that I knew was the greatest for it. And I know, because she works on all my stuff, she's going to listen to this, and don't let your head swell up, but you're doing a great job. But yeah, she has been like saving my life here. It's just been a life-changing experience, and she's amazing. And you can't beat that. You can't beat
that. You can barely put a price on it. I use Fiverr quite a bit. And my hack is I always search for level 2 and up. And it's gotten a whole different degree of specialty work just by doing that.
Yep. I've used Fiverr plenty of times for specialty items. Actually, the intro and outro for my podcast from Fiverr. I hired somebody to do that. So little things like that, there's so many different ways. And there's so many great freelancers out there that do this as their full-time job. It was part of what you had mentioned earlier, that great resignation. And there's so many people out there just doing amazing things online that you can hire to do the work that maybe you could do, but you're not going to do as good a job as somebody that's passionate and doing this full time as, right?
Yeah.
So instead of trying to save a couple bucks, get the right person to do the job so it's right the first time and you're not fixing it on the back end like I did when I first started. Stuff like that is huge for sure.
It's huge. It's huge. Yeah. Yeah. So, especially on the design works.
Especially. I got an email from Canva just the other day. I posted it up on social media that said we're in the top 5% of something on there, like with designs and stuff like that, with the amount of work that we've done on Canva, that our team is in like the top 5%, which I thought was really cool. So I posted it on Facebook and I told my VA she's awesome. So yeah, a lot of that is thanks to her and all the work that she's putting in and the team. But that's Becca, wonderful. This has been an absolutely awesome conversation. Again, like I said, this went down a route that I didn't expect to go, but I love it. It's different, and it was got me thinking a lot, right? Really got the juices flowing. So I'm pretty sure for my listeners, the same thing is going through their head right now. Wow, this was different, but this was like really good info. And you know what? We want to know more about Becca and what she's doing. And we want to learn more about her projects that she's working on. Maybe they want to learn more about stuff in the Blue Zone and why that's important. They're like, hey, where can I find information on her? So let's answer that question. So if you could, Becca, please share with us, where can people find more information about you? Do you have a website, social media, anything like that you could share with us? That would be awesome.
You bet. I'm an open book to talk to any of your listeners, whether you want to move overseas, whether you're interested in hotel conversions or interested in investing as an LP in deals I'm putting my own money in that I would vet for everybody. So feel free to reach out. You can email me directly, which is becca@hintinvestments.com. So it's BECA, hintinvestments.com. I have a free ebook for your listeners in case anybody is desiring to move overseas and leave it all behind. And it's called 6 Steps to Put Your Income on Autopilot and Move Overseas. You can find that at hintinvestments.com. And this is a guide that has links to cost of living indexes throughout the world to determine how much it costs to live in those places. Also, the best places for expats to live in 2022, the most economical places for expats to live, and a number of other things. It goes through how we pulled everything together with our retirement accounts and our stock accounts and how to look at those that often aren't loving you back like our stocks weren't. Talks about how to pull everything together. Hintinvestments.com, you'll find that. Or you can find me on LinkedIn, Becca Hint, or Hintergart, my very long married name that no one can spell. Just do Becca Hint, much easier.
All right, awesome. Becca, thank you so much. This truly was a pleasure. And for my listeners here, you guys know that I love to keep these conversations with, or these interviews, very conversational with my guests. And I tend to go down whatever route we go as we're talking. And that is the same thing that we did here with Becca. There's so many more things that she does that we didn't even get into. So this is just wave tops of who Becca really is and everything else that she's doing when she built up her passive income portfolio to live this life of freedom that she lives right now. Definitely go check out her website. Go check out her ebook. There's so much more information about her that I think will really just blow your mind with everything that she's been doing. Absolutely awesome. Again, Becca, thank you so much. I really genuinely enjoyed this conversation.
Me too. It's been so much fun. Thank you. Thank you very much. And we'll have to meet up in Hawaii and you can show me your surfing. Let's see.
You won't see much. You'll probably just see me falling over. But yeah, no, I appreciate that. Hey, everybody, thanks so much for joining me and our special guest, Becca Hint, on the Average Joe Finances podcast. Don't forget to go leave us a 5-star review and tell us what you liked, particularly about today's episode with Becca. And hey, guys, we're out of here. Aloha from Hawaii.
All right. Pura vida, as we say in Costa Rica. Pure life.
Love it.
Thank you, Mike. It's been so much fun. Love it.
Aloha. Thank you for making it to the end of this episode. Greatly appreciate you being here with me today on the Average Joe Finances podcast. If you haven't done so yet, make this the episode that you go leave us a 5-star rating or subscribe to our YouTube channel. The Average Joe Finances podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Have an outstanding day.
Thanks for listening to the Average Joe Finances podcast, your source for beating debt, saving money, and investing. Learn more at averagejoefinances.com.